How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Figure 4 Daily. It is December 18th, 2012, here at figure4online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined today by Jeremy Borash of TNA Impact Wrestling, and now of the British Boot Camp, which is going to be airing beginning in January on Challenge, if I've got that correct. And Jeremy, how are you doing today?
Good, Brian. How are you?
Not too bad. Challenge, is that the proper outlet?
That is the proper outlet. It's the TV scene in the UK is vastly different than it is in the United States. So it is a free view channel, which means every home in the country gets it, and which is different than Sky, which is I guess what the WWE is on there. You actually have to subscribe to that to see their programming. So in this case, with Challenge, it's a great partner because every household in the country with a TV license gets it.
Now, for those of you that are unaware of British Boot Camp, it is a reality show. It is similar to, I don't even know how to really explain this. I guess I don't want to say that it's too much like Tough Enough because it's actually very different. It's more, I don't even know really how to explain it. It is personality driven. There are four individuals: Party Marty Skrull, Rockstar Spud, and the Blossom Twins. They've all been chosen in advance, and it basically follows the lives of these four individuals as they make their way from doing some training in the UK to coming to America, coming to Nashville, the home of TNA, and apparently heading to Ohio Valley for a while as well. And I guess you would be the best person to explain this to people. What exactly is the concept behind this show?
Well, the concept, and actually I think that's a compliment that you couldn't really pair it with anything. It's a very different kind of show in terms of what the wrestling industry, I think, is used to. We basically took the idea of bringing four up-and-coming stars and taking them from basically contacting them, letting them know that they were going to be brought kind of into the loop, into the system, and show every aspect of what happens along the way. And that leads to some really interesting things. And obviously, being personality-driven, that just kind of happened. These four were, you know, the two Blossom Twins, Party Marty, and you throw Rockstar Spud, are about as different collectively as a group you could get. And their personalities really came out through the process. And so it was really easy, I guess, to shoot some subjects that really knew who they were comfortable who they were. And, you know, after, it didn't take long, we shot so much footage, you know, after a few hours, you could tell their personalities would really come out. You'd see who they really were. So over the course of, we've been shooting since September, bringing them into every aspect of what a star goes through along the process, from showing up the first time, going backstage, meeting the top guys. You know, you talk about influence, what top main event guys have. If they like you, they'll go to bat for you, and that pulls a lot of weight. So we just let them mingle with the top guys, got their opinions of them, brought them into every aspect of what a star goes through along the way, and showing also the other side of that, which is, you know, what happens after the show. They went out and had a great time. You know, there's some racier moments in the show. There's no question about it. We just really tried to show what the experience was like, and I think it's pretty entertaining along the way.
It's kind of like it's part Ultimate Fighter, because you've got a bunch of people and you give them alcohol and then they do crazy things. And it's part WWE Tough Enough. It's a contest to try to get a contract in a wrestling promotion. And it's also part documentary. And the thing that I liked most about the show was, honest to God, if I were to choose right now who I think should get the contract, I couldn't do it because I haven't seen enough of them in the ring. And it's actually kind of, I like that in the sense that you watch Ultimate Fighter and it's like, how many times can you see dudes hit the pads? How many times can you see some guys do double legs, whatever? And I like the show in the sense that I know everybody that is on this show. I mean, I know their personalities, I know their quirks, I know all sorts of things about these people, and so I have a desire to see them go further. And I think that that's more than you get with a lot of, like, you know, the Tough Enough show, for example, or Ultimate Fighter. I mean, most people, it's like you couldn't even name two guys from the last season of Ultimate Fighter, or name three people from the last season of Tough Enough, you know. But this, it's like you focus on four people, and you're not going to forget those four people, and it's a contest. And it's interesting to find out what is the decision-making process going to be to choose a winner here. And I guess that's my question for you. How is a winner going to be chosen?
Well, it's exactly right, because I thought if we showed too much wrestling along the way, you're kind of giving away what the ultimate goal is, and that's to perform in front of Dixie Carter, Hulk Hogan, the fans, the boys backstage in the Impact Zone, where the true test of a new guy coming in is. Put him on the stage, give him all the elements that a major guy gets. You know, I was really made sure I got in there when we were doing this, the filming day, because, you know, I wanted to give Rockstar Spud as good of an entrance as Kurt Angle gets. And I wanted to give Party Marty Scurll, you know, so, you know, they're coming out to commercial music, which is another real interesting element to the show. As an editor, I absolutely am in love with the fact that, you know, we can use music that's current, hip, mainstream, everything from Metallica to everything. I mean, you can run the gamut of music. So really, I think creatively, artistically, gives them, something of an advantage at times, especially when they come out to, you know, Rockstar Spud comes out to Living on a Prayer. It's perfect for his gimmick. His entrance, you know, when in the Impact Zone, is every bit as good as, a top guy. So you get to see them in the main event of their platform, of this platform, which is getting in front of, what would be the equivalent of I don't want to say a dark match, because it was shot with the cameras, everything the same, but it put them on a level as everybody else, gave them an even playing field at the end of the show, and saw how, you know, they can perform when compared in the same ring as, you know, our top stars in Impact. So bringing them all the way there, that to me was kind of the payoff of the last episode. And as the series continues and you go through, you get to see who ends up there.
I'm going to talk about all of these characters here. It's not really a spoiler. I don't even think there are really any spoilers in what I've seen, honest to God. I have no idea what's going to happen in the end, who's going to get chosen or anything like that. But it's funny, because there was a clip from one of the episodes. I saw a clip of Dixie Carter, and everybody is at a I don't know where they're at. They're at a restaurant or something like that. They're drinking wine, and she's showing everybody on the iPad, Bound for Glory. They all showed up in the audience. There's a very brief shot of them at Bound for Glory, and she had told them before that you're going to get this one shot, and it's going to be really quick, so make the most of it. And it's like, I don't know, 5 seconds long. And so then she goes back and she shows everybody, and she's like, what do you think of the 5 seconds you had? How do you think you performed? And anyway, the conclusion at the end of this is, she says, when this whole thing started, I had an idea of who I thought was going to take this whole thing. And as time has passed, my feeling has changed. And it was so funny, because I thought the exact same thing as I was watching these shows. At the very beginning, like within the first 5 minutes of the first episode, it was like, Marty Scurll wins. I mean, why is he not signed somewhere right now? I mean, I had no doubt in my mind. It was like, well, there's your guy. I mean, why is there even a contest right here? But as the show went on, you know, by midway through maybe the second episode, it was like, hold on a second. You know, all of these people really have something. And the one guy, Spud, who 5 minutes into the first episode, I thought, this dude's got no chance. I have no idea why this dude's even here. Total 180 on that guy. And I think that's kind of a testament to the way that everything's been put together, because very quickly my opinion was changed on everybody in this program.
Yeah, that's been one of the great things about it. As far as the early test market research with people that have seen it, as it's been a real broad appeal to even non-wrestling fans. And that's the biggest compliment I think you can get, because wrestling fans, you know, I'm glad every one of them are going to be watching this show and are going to get to see it in the UK, and our fan base is why we have great success there, obviously. But when you can catch on with a bit of a mainstream audience and get the kind of coverage and the media coverage, especially over there with the tabloid media and the amount of shows they focus on with celebrity news, to really make it into that market and come across in that and show your product in that light, really speaks well for the characters and how well they come across the board. Brian, what you told me about who you think won it with or would win it with in the first 5 minutes, you know, not uncommon, but at the same time, hearing the debate about the different characters. And the best part about it was right after the finals, we took a camera around backstage and got, you know, the locker room was sold out in front of the monitors. Everybody was watching their matches. And right afterwards, I went and grabbed, you know, Jeff Hardy. I grabbed Kurt Angle. I grabbed Samoa Joe, Taz, Mickey James. Who is going to get this contract? And it was just across the board different. Everybody had their own reasons. Everybody had different choices and an explanation why. So I think that's a great part of the show is you get invested in the characters very, very quickly. And that after that, you know, it's just sit back and watch the ride because you know what they're about and you can see their different quirks come out as the show progresses.
The I guess the first question is, since we're on the topic of the individuals, how were the Final Four chosen?
The Final Four were chosen by Jeff Jarrett about a year, you know, with, I guess, in the early genesis of the program, and then kind of things evolved from there, and the show took on kind of some different forms along the way, as that always happens. So as they progressed, we knew that we needed people that were pretty much ready there, all ready to go, already had ring skills, already could go in the ring, already could talk, already could, you know, we had some notoriety, so we weren't just taking people off the street. And they're used to being in the wrestling business, so what they took in as performers, you know, they were used to on some level, but at the same time realized that what was happening to them when they're backstage meeting Hulk Hogan for the first time, when different things are happening to them along the way, it's enough that they respect every moment of what happens, and that comes across, you know, when they meet Hulk Hogan for the first time. Spud, who is a lifelong Hulk Hogan fan, is, you know, you can see the emotion on his face. It's just he's shell-shocked, you know. So it's real genuine, and that's as a wrestling fan, it's great to watch, and as I think just any human being can relate to that, meeting their idol for the first time.
I don't know if you did this by design, but the more I think about just the fact that I haven't seen a lot of wrestling so far, and I, actually, the first question, how many episodes will there be in total?
Total of 6 episodes.
6 episodes, all right. I've not seen all of them. So I don't know how much wrestling is in the later episodes, but it's funny because I'm really intrigued to see the wrestling now. I don't know if that's by design, but when I see all of the characters, it's like Marty Scurll. I mean, when I first saw him, it was like, well, obviously this guy's a winner. He's got the look. He's got some size. There were some brief clips of him wrestling. He appears to work great. And it was like, okay, so what's the debate here? And then, you know, after you see the Blossom Twins for a while and seem to be really nice girls, you see their personality, and I start to think that I always thought the Bellas were underutilized in WWE. Some people think I'm nuts, but I always thought, man, you got two good-looking twins. There's so many things you could do with this gimmick, and they never did it. So it's like, okay, you've got something very unique here, the fact that you've got two twins. Can they work? I don't know. It's a very important question. And then you go to Spud, who in the very first episode, it's like you take one look at him and you think, okay, he's way too small. He'll never make it due to his size. He admits that himself, that everyone says that to him. He goes and gets drunk. He's late for practice. He's hungover. It's like, dude, this guy's got everything going against him. And then all of a sudden you see him talk. You see his personality. And you're like, man, when you look at those aspects of Spud, he blows everybody away. But again, he's really small, so then it comes down to, okay, how good is the guy in the ring? Because if he's great in the ring, you know, maybe he can be an Austin Aries style. If he's not great in the ring, then that kind of is a big strike against him, given everything else. So to me, it's like, I'm leaning towards, personally, like thinking Spud is your guy just because he just has so much personality. But I don't know if he can work. I don't know how good he is. So I can understand.
That's kind of it. I think unraveling the mystery of, you know, can these guys make it is kind of the build-up to the, you know, the finals.
Yes.
And wrestling in the Impact Zone in front of the crowd with all the elements, all the television aspect of things, and getting to see them in the true aspect is, to me, the payoff of the show. And it's a good build to get there. and we, you know, we show wrestling along the way. There's footage at OVW when they go up there, and you know, but at the same time, you're so invested in the characters. By the time the main event, I guess, imagine it like a five episode long video package leading to the big main event, which is, you know, an eventual tryout match. And getting there, I think, is the journey that really, you know, is the fun part about it. Now, also the other thing to realize where you're at with seeing them in the ring, you know, the very open of the show is about the bigger, the larger than life personalities, you know, especially to the UK fans that know Big Daddy and Giant Haystack. You know, Big Daddy couldn't work worth a lick. But it was his personality that won him over with the fans. And so we took that into account is, you know, there's a lot of great wrestlers out there, but, you know, how invested are you in their characters and why do you want to watch them? And then that's a real part of our industry, and we wanted to address that and make sure that was, you know, that was a part that we have characters that are relatable. And that's part of the real great part about the show is that, you know, you really are invested in these guys in a very short time.
Now, how close is the series to being finished in terms of the shows are fully edited, all ready to go, just need to be sent to the broadcast company?
Well, the real interesting thing for me on this show is when I kind of was asked to take it on, knowing it's a pretty intensive process to go through. We had something 60 something locations across the United Kingdom that we used to shoot. And when you have a crew, when you're dealing with for me, foreign currency and keeping track of budgets and the process is just astounding. I mean, way more. I don't want to say way more work than I anticipated, but you know, now we're kind of at the ending stages of post-production. It's like, you know, I'm looking back on, wow, this was a great experience, but it was all very, very time intensive. And, you know, when you have the locations and everything, I guess I'm a little bit of a stickler for, you know, I had one, well, I guess I had a camera guy with me from from TNA, Brian Edwards is his name, and went over there with him, and we had a pretty sizable crew in the UK running around shooting. And, you know, you factor all that in, I really had to take mental notes because when I got home, I found that I didn't want anyone else to edit it. I wanted it to be exactly how I envisioned it when I was seeing it and when we were shooting everything. So I asked basically to, you know, give me the tools necessary where I can edit this thing. And so, God bless TNA, they went out and got me, I have the fastest MacBook Pro on Earth. I have 8 hard drives I carry with me everywhere and have been just pretty much nonstop cutting this thing in airports, on airplanes, all over the world. It's been a very time-intensive experience, but you know, knowing that I was going to be taking this on with the travel that we have, had to become mobile. And it's been a great process just to, that alone, being able to take a budget with a top company in the world for television, Sky, who is, in the UK is everything, and being able to use technology now to put this show together while kind of on the run has been very cool. Technology has been amazing to work with. And so now it's just when you edit something, it's all numbers, basically. You can take your edits and forward them off, and they up-res the video, so you're dealing with the high-quality video, and it's, you don't have to carry around. Yeah, I'm dealing with like 175 gigabyte video files here constantly, so there's a lot of transferring, and the process is just tedious, but I had to do that creatively because I knew exactly what I wanted with this show. And using commercial music in a show for an editor is a, you know, especially working here in the United States, it's a different set of rules there. Being able to, throw in a Metallica song behind some of the wrestling action you see during training. It's just very cool. So I've enjoyed every minute of it, but it's been very time intensive. And right now, just before Christmas break, we're finishing up. Everything is basically in place, but we're kind of putting the final touches on 5 and 6 right now. So the series is just about done and going to air throughout the month of January, starting January 1st.
You know, about 4 or 5 years ago, Vinny and I and our website admin, my brother-in-law Tony, did a short silent film for the Seattle Times. I can't remember what the contest was, but it was only like 3 minutes long, and we won. But the point is, it was only 3 minutes, and we edited that thing together. We did the whole thing ourselves, filming, the editing, and everything like that. And as we're editing it together, one day, Tony just stopped, and he looked at it, and he just goes, I can't even tell if this is any good anymore. Because he'd watch it over and over and over, and he'd edited and switched this and switched that, etc., blah, blah, blah. Have you gotten to that point yet?
First week.
So you're far beyond that.
You talk about the psychological part of video editing. And I have a whole new... I've done a video editing before. I put together Forever Hardcore, the documentary I did on ECW about 5 or 6 years ago. I edited that, and I've done a lot of stuff for TNA over the years. But, this is a whole different... I mean, this is a whole different ballgame. And, yeah, there are... I have to run a lot by a lot of people just for my own sane mental stability, because you do. You see stuff so much. And then the other thing you have to do is watch people while they watch it. And that's another thing I've done. We've played episodes at staff meetings, at TNA in Nashville, and I didn't watch the TV. I was just watching the faces on everybody. And made changes from that. Just judging by how the average viewer is watching things. So you definitely do. You become so ingrained in everything and every moment, and things that you think were funny or things that you think happened that you need to be in there. You know, hearing people say, that's kind of, you could probably move that along a little quicker. That's kind of like, really? Okay, all right. And then you start to see it from another person's aspect. You got to realize that, your own instincts account for a lot, but you need feedback from other people to really solidify what is the right choice, when it comes to certain parts of the show.
Are you happy with it now?
Ryan, I've never been happier with anything in my life, honestly. I really am.
Are you satisfied?
I just think that the whole process has just been so cool. Just because I just fell in love with the cast. I don't want to say it's renewed my love for wrestling, because it's never gone anywhere. I've always loved the industry. But, it's really brought me into appreciating again the process of what somebody who is trying to make it goes through. And, I've probably watched a handful of tryout matches over the last year that have happened in the Impact Zone, and we have a lot of them, but, by the end of the day, and a million things going on, and they happen enough where it's like, I probably don't need to see that. You really just kind of, and they just become another face. And for 10 years I've watched, guys come in to the locker room for the first time and how nervous they are, and seeing it, and you become numb to it after a while, just being on that side of it. Here's another guy trying to get a job. So for me, it really put a whole new renew of the process and the sacrifice that people go through to succeed in wrestling, especially these days. And so for me, that's been a very rewarding part of the whole thing. It's just now renewing appreciation, I think, for people that, and how many, thousands of independent wrestlers are out there, working for peanuts, trying to just get noticed. And so to bring four really cool people into the fold of TNA and giving them that experience from start to finish, I think was just made me appreciate what, people go through now these days.
Now, I don't live in the UK, obviously. Watching this show, it's clear that standards are a little more, things are a little more lenient, it appears, than they are here in the U.S., unless there's going to be a significant amount of editing. A lot of swearing on the show. A man's Johnson is exposed briefly. Is there going to be a lot of, are these things, what is allowed and not allowed, basically, is my question. And is there stuff that that trumped that, which you actually had to cut out of the deal?
Well, keep in mind too, there's a couple different things. You're dealing with a completely different television universe. This is exclusively for UK. It's on 10 o'clock at night, which over there is you're able to show programming that's on more of an adult level, which is different than here in the U.S., I think, on some levels. But at the same time, that kind of, you watch what is current in the marketplace, and you know what the show is. A huge show over there is The Only Way is Essex, and there's a bunch of shows over there, and to compete on that level, doing a squeaky clean show at 10 o'clock at night, doesn't quite fly. And so I wanted to make it as real as possible. And the cursing that goes on isn't for the sake of cursing. It's done when, anger is going on. It's done when, real passionate people are expressing themselves. And so to me, it's not done gratuitously, but at the same time, I just tried to really document, as much as I love wrestling shows during the day and putting in a hard day's work, a part of the reward for that is, maybe going out and having a beer with the guys afterwards and just relaxing, unwinding a little bit. Well, we show you that, too. And I think the real, the real compliment that we've been paid for this show is Challenges chosen to premiere it on literally the best television night of the year in the UK, which is January 1st. At the best time slot possible, which is 10 p.m. On that night. What they've done as far as set up the show for the highest exposure possible is a great compliment. So being on at 10 o'clock at night there's obviously a more leniency, and there is some editing. There will not be any male junk shown without blurring, but that was one of those things. It just happened, and what was funny about that is those honest moments are right there in front of you, and nothing is done, I don't think, for sensationalism. It's just, hey, we caught a lot of stuff, and we shot a lot of footage over the course of the last 3 months, hundreds of hours of footage, and, really took, I think, the best of it all and put it into the show.
In the last, the Australian version of Ultimate Fighter, one of the coach's boxing coach, knocked out the other coach, and the cameras weren't running. That would have been a hell of a moment. Was there anything when you were putting together British Boot Camp where you were like, the one moment I wasn't filming, this happened?
Well, thankfully, no. We were shooting night and day. If they were together, I wanted a camera on them. And we had, basically they had downtime. They had time to be alone and everything. But when the four of them together, we were rolling. So what's real interesting, I think, in one of the episodes is they go to Bound for Glory. So they flew there and, they had that little time on camera, which was part of the day. But also part of the day was going backstage and, we see them mingle with the talent and socially how they all interact. So, it's been a real interesting look into backstage and the social element of things. And so we wanted to make sure that everything was there. So nothing really, thankfully, everything that that happened was captured on tape. We have so much great bonus footage too. And I think there's going to be a lot of supplemental footage on the website for Challenge that's going to be coming out alongside with the show. So there's just so much great stuff that's there.
Now, in Canada, they had a show called World of Hurt. Lance Storm did one season. Roddy Piper did the second. I got all the episodes.
I watched it. Actually, I was over in the UK, and it was airing there.
Really?
So I got to see a couple episodes, yeah.
The Piper or the Lance version?
The Lance.
The Lance version.
Yeah. I watched a lot of that. And, I would say it's a different show, obviously, where
yes.
I think they're both very different. I like that you can, hopefully pull the curtain back without, exposing the business too much. And I think there's a real element of that too, to this. That's, I don't think we ever really tried to jeopardize, the basic fundamentals of keeping the business, protected on some level. So, that was just kind of thing in the back of my head. I always kind of kept. So I wanted to make sure that was different, but yeah. World of Hurt, I've seen most of the first season, I think.
Yeah, I really enjoyed both seasons just for the pure wackiness of them. And obviously, whenever I reviewed them on this program, I had to have the angry people going, "Why are you reviewing a show I can't see?" So, obviously, you're going to have people asking, "Jeremy, why did you put together a show I cannot see?" Any possibility that this will air in any form in the United States?
I would hope so. I would, you know, like anything, imagine that I would assume they would maybe put it out on iTunes on some level. I'm not quite sure. You know, you got to remember as well, for us, the UK is a huge television market, and the numbers we do there are, you know, obviously not what are done in the U.S., but, you know, are very sizable. And so I've been saying for 10 years, we need to do more in the UK, and that's a market that is, I think, across the board neglected by the U.S. wrestling companies. Now, of course, you're seeing a lot more of it, a lot more touring over there, but, you know, we go there once a year. We tour once a year, and it's one of those things where I wish we could go more. I wish we could go every 6 months, but the one time a year we go there, it's pretty damn special for everybody, and everybody's trying to get on the tour, make sure they're there and be a part of it. And so for me, you know, it does. I wish everybody could see it. I wish every wrestling fan could see it. At the same time, I think for the industry, I want the industry to see it, and I want you know, I want the industry to see how characters, you know, I think it's a good lesson in, you know, how the great things you can tap into when you get to know a personality really well, or you know, a person's mannerisms a little bit. So I hope as many people see it as possible. Possibly see it, you know, hopefully maybe they'll be on YouTube at some point, put out through Challenge, but it's, you know, going to be one of those things exclusively for the UK fans right now.
I just want to say before we let you get into the plugs that, again, it is the personality-driven aspect of the show that I think is the best part, and it's really, honest to God, it's why I loved World of Hurt as well. I mean, there was almost no wrestling on that show. But what it was a half-hour capsule of a different personality every week, them interacting with other people, and maybe you liked them, maybe you didn't like them, but, you know, the old goofy cliche, at least you cared about them in one way or the other. There's so much wrestling on television, and especially if you're one of those people that goes on the internet, and you're watching Dragon Gate, Ring of Honor, TNA, 18 hours of WWE every week, how many times can you see the same guys having the same matches? You need to give people a reason to care about a match they may have seen 55 times already. And the way to do that is to get people into the characters, to get people into the stories. And I think that I really like this show because of that. I want to see these people get a chance because I feel like I know them after watching 4 episodes of the show. And sometimes I can watch a wrestling show and there's a guy that's, you know, he's been on TV for a year and it's like, what do I know about this guy? He doesn't like people that don't want to be cool. What the hell else do I know about him? Nothing. He's got big hair. So I really did like it. And hopefully everybody here gets a chance to check it out because especially when you tell the story of all the work you personally put into it with 8 hard drives traveling around the world, it's a pretty exceptional documentary series, really.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's been an amazing experience. I think I'm going to go. I'm actually looking at doing this. This is stupid. I'm actually looking at going homeless in 2013. I have a nice condo downtown Nashville. It's beautiful. I'm never there. And it would be a lot cheaper for me to rent that out and stay at a nice hotel. Because it's been, the opportunities TNA has given me to travel and work in different places around the world has just been unbelievable. So much fun. We're going over again in the UK for a tour at the end of January. You know, we just did more. There's some great stuff going on all around the world. So I would love to be in a position where, you know, if British Boot Camp as a format is great, you know, who's to say it couldn't end up being somewhere else? You know, there's great wrestlers in Canada. There's great wrestlers in Australia that are just, you know, waiting for an opportunity, and it's there. You know, it's definitely there. Those personalities are there. You just got to find them and get into their expose them for their flaws, for their the great things about them. So I think that's just getting in there, and those personalities are out there. So maybe it's something that can be done elsewhere. We'll see.
So potentially a season 2.
Well, you never want to talk season 2 until season 1's over, right? So we'll.
But the experience was such that if the season 1 went well, you'd never turn down the opportunity to do a second season.
Well, it's a great partnership because for us, for Sky Television, you know, the biggest Sky is everything when it comes to your television in the UK. You know, you're talking 70 million people, 70 million. I mean, so it's a big market, and for them to, it's their first reality series they've commissioned with TNA. It's the first reality series in the history of the Challenge Network. So there's a lot riding on it, and they've really been amazing partners every bit of the way. It's been just a great experience to you know, work with them. So it's been one of those things where you know, hopefully it's going to be the start of a good partnership in terms of some supplemental programming and some you know, some bringing things you know, I guess a different side of some programming that you know, at least the fans in the UK will get to enjoy.
Let me ask you one last question. This is about you personally. On the show, the guys get a chance to meet Sting and Hulk Hogan, and Sting, the old grizzled veteran, shakes everybody's hand. And he's got sage advice for them, which is longevity, he says, is the key. 25 years, I believe he said. And then he points at Hogan and says, how long? And Hogan's like, I don't know, brother. But you have been working pretty much nonstop in wrestling for what is it now? 16 years? 15, 16 years?
probably pretty close. Yeah, 14, 15, I think, somewhere around there, probably full-time.
So when you think about some of the places that you've worked, including WCW, which, of course, is now dead, and you have worked pretty continuously in this industry for a long time, and you're still going very strong today, and I guess just as an old grizzled veteran, for all the youngsters listening to this right now, maybe they're in wrestling, maybe they want to get into wrestling, or maybe they're just in a job that they want to keep for a long time. Jeremy Borash, what is the secret to longevity in this, in any business?
Work harder than everybody else. I have no other way. There's no substitute for hard work. Period, end of story. I don't want to say I do work harder than everybody else, because there's some amazing people at TNA, and it's unbelievable. You know, the work ethic is just kind of comes from the environment, believe me. You know, if you're inspired to do something, you've got to put the hours in. You know, they always say, what is it, you know, 10,000 hours before you can become proficient at something. To me, it's just, you know, how bad you want it. I knew at a very young age that I wanted to do this on some level. I certainly didn't expect it would be in the wrestling business, but I knew that I wanted to be in television and broadcasting and focused on that, you know, from the age of 14, basically. And through the whole thing, it's just, if you have a passion for something, you got to put in the hours for it. And I think anybody that's really had, you know, I look at the work ethic of Jeff Jarrett has, Dixie Carter, everybody's just working around the clock to do what's best for this company. And so that's very contagious, but at the same time, you got to bring something different to the table. If there's something you see that needs help, go do it, and don't be afraid to put in the hours. You know, I guess it also helps to be, you know, still single and no kids.
That, once that happens, it's all downhill, right?
It's all downhill. Well, my girlfriend lives in England, so I go over there. You know, I've made 20 trips over there, I think, the last 2 years. So, obviously, knowing the market, being over there has been helpful in British boot camp and doing that. But, you know, it's a blessing and a curse to be on the road as much, because obviously you don't get to spend much time with her, but at the same time, the time we get to spend together is fantastic. And by the way, I'm leaving Friday to go spend Christmas at Rollerball Rocco's place.
Oh, my God. Why don't you just bring all your hard drives and do a two-hour documentary, Christmas at Rollerballs?
It could be my breakfast with Blassie.
I gotta say very quickly, he is a celebrity trainer on the show. And within about 5 minutes, I was like, can we just have him win?
he's incredible. And, you know, it was really tough, because when we were going over who we wanted to be, you know, as far as a mentor, a British star, to mentor these guys, you know, from that era, from the World of Sport days, and, you know, unfortunately, there weren't a lot to choose from, you know, as far as, you know, the household names that everybody knows. You know, a lot of them are either passed on or, you know, in pretty bad health, you know, and wouldn't be able to do that. But what a great find in Rollerball Rocco. And I met him backstage at Wembley last year. He came and hung out at our show and just kind of talked to him a little bit. And to me, we flew him in. He lives in the Canary Islands, south of Spain. So he's not actually in the UK anymore. But wow, what a just a beloved, you know, people remember that. And just growing up in the AWA days, for me, you know, everybody still talks about the Crusher and Mad Dog Vachon and Jerry Blackwell. Well, over there, they all, you know, when you say wrestling, they all mention those same names, and he was one of them. So to get him on the show, he's just, he's such a cool guy, and so many great stories from Japan and everything. We just hit it off really well from the get-go. So enough that, yeah, going to go spend the holidays with him. So looking forward to that.
You know, there were a couple moments when he was doing his training that he didn't seem entirely comfortable, and I couldn't figure out. It wasn't like he was reading from a script, but it almost seemed like he was trying. Like he had so much that he wanted to say, but like it all would have been one continuous bleep or something like that. I'm trying to figure out exactly what it was. He just didn't seem entirely comfortable at points. How is Rollerball Rocco? I mean, was he ready to just tear these kids a new one and kind of decided he needed to behave in a different manner, or am I missing something here?
Well, he was, you know, he's. I don't want to say he's old school. I think that could be viewed as a negative these days for some reason. It's not. He's old school in the traditional sense of paying your dues, and you know, it was a very different era, you know, then. But it's also those same principles are very much hold true, I think, in this industry. And so for him, it was, I think, a little bit. It wasn't out of his element, because I think once the training thing, you know, the training day started and he got to see things, he was, you know, that's where he really took form. And then, you know, without giving away what happens, you know, at the end of that training session, what goes down is just absolutely incredible. And, you know, I'm thinking the guy's 63 maybe years old. I don't know what he could still go. He's definitely still, you know, one of those guys that if he wanted to come out of retirement for one match, just to, you know, for a night, I bet it would be pretty fun to watch.
And he'll steal his drumstick. Beat you with it repeatedly is what he would do with that thing. Oh, go ahead.
He's a great guy. I also want to, you know, the fact that, you know, the respect that he had, he's still, you know, keeps in contact with Hulk Hogan. So, you know, it was fun to just, when we were talking about it, Hulk, you know, was very supportive of the decision to use him as well. So that was the other thing too. What's great about it is, you know, everybody at first didn't quite know what to make of the show, and once they saw a little bit of it, then it's like, okay, now here's where you can help go with this, or here's where, you know, these guys really have some something to offer. So getting the input that we have from everybody across the roster has been just a lot of fun to take that process in.
All right, let's plug this show. It is starting in January. It is on Challenge. And, Jeremy, the floor is yours.
It is British Boot Camp New Year's Day, January 1st. It is going to be on Challenge TV, which is on all television platforms in the UK. It's going to be the first night we're premiering with the first two episodes. So you'll get an hour of British Boot Camp, and it's 10 o'clock, and that is Tuesday, January 1st. It's going to be on every Tuesday night, and take us right into the Road to Lockdown tour in the UK, starting in late January. So it's January is a huge month for us in the UK, and that's going to be something that I'm going to be over there for much of the month. So looking forward to being there.
And let's get
now,
some.
Of course, I should probably plug. We also do a show called Impact.
That's right. Thursdays, right? Thursdays, I believe.
Yes, Thursdays. Yes, we have. We focus primarily on British Boot Camp, which is great because it's what we want to talk about here. But Impact's, you know, every Thursday night, Spike TV, and it's, I'll tell you what, next 2 weeks, some amazing things happen, some really amazing moments. I don't want to spoil yet, but we recorded our TVs last week in Orlando for the rest of the year, and just a really, really solid couple episodes to close out 2012.
And Jeremy Borash as well, his Twitter and such.
I just hit the. I'm a little mad. I introduced Mick Foley to Twitter, 3 years ago, and you know, I was all proud. I had 50,000 followers, and you know, of course, he passed me by within about 3 weeks. The Twitter is still so much fun. Enjoy social media with TNA and get to do that. That's my other, basically daily duties with TNA is with social media and helping out there. So have a great staff, Dave Lagana and Bill Banks, a bunch of guys that help out on that. So that is, and Jason Whitehorn, got to mention him too. He's another guy that I work with real closely. So it's at Jeremy Borash, at JEREMYBURASH, and having fun on Twitter, enjoying that.
So there you go.
You're now, Dave's finally gotten on board, right?
Yes, he has, in fact. Like Mick Foley, he has passed me by, but not quite that bad yet. We're within, I think, 4,000 or so, but someone did buy him 25,000 followers, and Twitter, I guess, pairs off all of them, so just look at
funny.
It like...
That was really funny in the industry when people started buying followers.
Yeah.
Because backstage, we're like, well, how the F does this guy have 108,000 followers, and he's a nobody? You know, people were really baffled at first, and then it kind of got out, and then they all just disappeared, I guess.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. I don't want to spoil the show, but on British Boot Camp, which is debuting on January 1st on Challenge in the UK, there is a argument over who has the most Twitter followers that results in violence.
That conversation is one of my... What happens there, I was so glad cameras, as you said, that's why we had cameras rolling all the time. Because I think the... How could you have a fight over Twitter followers? After you see what happens, it's like, okay, all right, this is about more than Twitter followers, obviously, but...
Yes.
It became a topic, and it was, you know, that's a very real thing. How many elements of guys backstage, you know, as much as they won't admit it, they'll look at each other's followers, you know, and see, and somehow justify in their own mind that means that guy's more popular or less popular than I am. So that was a little moment that just happened, and I thought, well, that's a real moment. That's what a wrestler these days kind of pays attention to. And, you know, you just hear it. You hear the locker room chatter about things like that. So there's a lot of real elements to this that I've seen and heard backstage that are just brought out right before the audience with British Boot Camp. So that's a real cool part of the show.
Yeah, I could not believe my eyes. I mean, I could, but I couldn't, if that makes any sense. But that's something to look forward to, everybody. A battle over a real life, honest to God battle over Twitter followers. You got to see it to believe it. So check the show out, of course, tomorrow. What's today? Thursday, I'm sorry. Thursday on Spike TV, of course, is Impact. And starting in January, yeah. Impact and Bellator back-to-back. So if you're an MMA and pro wrestling fan, that's a great block for you. And you can follow TNA, TNAWrestling.com, ImpactWrestling.com, Jeremy Borash as well, at Jeremy Borash, and British Boot Camp. So, Jeremy, thanks so much for doing the show today, and best of luck, and hopefully this works out great for you.
I appreciate it very much, Brian. Thank you. And I always want to tell everybody as well, with Impact Wrestling every Thursday night on Spike, 2013, I just did an interview with Dixie Carter on Friday from her house. We're going to put up on the website this later this week, and it's kind of forecasting 2013. And we're in for a pretty wild ride, I think. It's going to be a good year for Impact.
That's right, and I should mention that you do the a lot of the TNA Todays as well, so... Those are available.
We're doing all kinds of stuff. We're a lot of hats over here.
That's right. So check it all out, everybody. And we're going to wrap it up. Thanks so much for listening. And we'll talk to you again later on tonight.